Welcome to the mikvah.org podcast. The mikvah organization has been dedicated to the education and resources for Jewish family life since 1975-5735. You can support our vital work at mikvah.org/donate. Thank you for your support and enjoy today's recording.
Welcome to the final episode of the Building a Family podcast series. This episode is in continuation of the series where we learn about building a family from many angles, including halacha, sichais, and maimarim. We encourage you to follow the rabbinic guidance and listen to all of the previous episodes first as context for this final one. In this episode, we hear from Rabbi Kasimov as he answers halachic questions as a follow-up to the previous episode, which had the medical perspective with Dr. Scott Chudnov.
So today we're very pleased to have Rabbi Kasimov, who will be teaching us a very important shiur. We chose not to get into the practical tips, women to women, or the practical application of all these methods, how, you know, everyday women get to make it more user-friendly, because we want to underscore the importance of every individual must consult with their rav, with their doctor, some, or the medical provider. Sometimes the medical provider will provide more user-friendly tips. Sometimes they won't. A woman could turn to a mikvah.org experienced college teacher who could go through with that if she so desires or needs. But we will leave out that information for in our public shiurim. Once a couple has received a heter from their rav to use contraception, either short term or longer, and of course they're in touch with their doctor about medically which options they could choose from, while making a choice, it's important to know that every form of birth control will have some halachic shilas attached to it. This shiur is for information only. We're not paskining shilas. This is, once you hear this information, you take this information to your own rav and say, you gave me a heter to use birth control. I spoke to the doctor. This is the one that I think I could choose that works for us. Here are the shilas I want to ask you about this form of birth control, so I make sure that this is done, everything according to halacha. And so again, I want to reiterate two things. This shiur is for people who already got a heter to use birth control. And of course, you would have asked your rav how long the heter is for, because some methods are for short term, some methods are better for long term. And number two, once you hear the shiur, you're not paskening. You take these questions back to your own rav and you clarify how you should move onwards. So number one, we're going to go through the different methods. We're going to label them, and then we're going to ask Rabbi Kasimov what we should be aware of from the halachic perspective, and perhaps sometimes even from the hashkafic perspective if there's something to add. So the first, a common form of birth control is the usage of hormones that do come in various forms. So Rabbi Kasimov, can you please tell us in general what we should be aware of that applies to all forms of hormones, whether they're ingested, whether any other way that it enters our body?
So the first thing when it comes to hormonal forms of birth control, there's two, or actually maybe possibly even three aspects that we have to take into consideration. So interestingly enough, let's start with the halachic approach to hormonal birth control. It's actually from the better or more preferred method of birth control because there are less shilas involved. Of course, again, this is only for somebody who received a heter. It doesn't mean just because there's less shilas, that means everyone can use it. Once somebody has a heter for birth control, as Mrs. Morozov said clearly, then the hormonal methods are actually on the better side. Now, the reason for that is very, very simple. Many other types of forms of birth control, they act as a barrier that they prevent the zeta to go where it has to go, or they do their pile in other ways, they affect in other ways, which are connected to shilas. When it comes to the hormones actually affect the body, that the body should not go forward with a pregnancy. So halachically, without going into all the depth behind it and all the discussions of the Paiskim, this is actually a much easier, lighter weight, so to speak, in halacha. So halachically, definitely something hormonal is better. Now, with that being said, we also have to look at other factors when it comes to hormonal birth control. Many times, and by many people, there's are serious side effects when it comes to hormonal birth control, such as spotting. This can be either with a hormonal IUD or with a pill, which we're going to be discussing later on. I'm just giving examples of what hormonal birth controls could be. They affect the body, and that triggers the body to, for whatever reason, to actually spot when usually the body should not be spotting. And this could create serious complications, potentially, for counting the Shiv Nikim. So this is something which is very important to take into consideration if one is considering this method of birth control. So on one hand, it is lighter, so to speak, in the sense of birth control for itself. But on the other hand, a person also has to have the awareness that it could cause difficulties with counting the Shiv Nikim, performing the bedikas for the Einas, and this is something that everyone has to be aware of before taking it, because many people, they start and they're surprised. My doctor never told me that I'm going to be spotting. I never imagined that I'm going to be having difficulties counting the Shiv Nikim or performing any other bedikas that I need to. So some people are caught by surprise, and only when they share with the Rav that they're taking the birth control, that's when they find out and reconsider whether or not this was the right choice. So the first thing is, that's the first thing that you need to take into consideration. Of course, this is something to be discussed with the doctor, because there are potential ways of how to make it easier, which I'm sure is going to be discussed in other presentations. Then the next thing is the Rebbe's Shitta when it came to hormonal pills, taking hormonal contraceptives. This is something which is very important for us to take into consideration. There was a famous yichidus with a certain chassid, and the Rebbe shared with this chassid that being mefakbik, so to speak, not so pro using the pills, because they did not know yet what the tzitzis is, what kind of effects it could have on the body going forward. This is a yichidus that happened, and I personally confirmed it, and I believe it was publicly said even by the person who had this yichidus. Together with that, I have seen later minus printed from the Rebbe that they did change the way that they manufacture the pills. Umemela, whatever concerns there were, it's not necessarily that those same concerns would apply. So again, this is not a psak. This is just sharing information. This is something available for everyone to look into on their own, with their own ability. And I just want to point out, it was also other Gedali Yisrael who were very skeptical about using the pill. This is including Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Moshe Stern, which was the Debrecen Rav. Here, both two other American Paiskim. But again, things have yes changed, and the chashash is the concerns on a health level that used to exist when the pill first came out, not necessarily exist now. But this is certainly a question for a doctor. I'm just putting it on the table so people have that awareness.
Thank you, Rabbi Kasimov. I just want to add, as a woman, as a college teacher for quite a few years, Baruch Hashem, I've seen a great shift at Taharenu, the organization called Taharenu. They did a lot of research on the usage of hormones for women. And before somebody actually starts using hormones, it's a good idea to get in touch with them, or maybe an experienced college teacher who knows this information, because the dosages and the timing of usage, there's a lot of details that you could prevent a lot of the staining that Rabbi Kasimov mentions. And the staining is usually in the beginning, as your body adjusts to it, not necessarily it's ongoing. It's part of a choice that a woman has to make as far as how this affects her, but there's ways to prevent so many staining issues, as well as if you may want to ask the Rav L'chatchila, like the first time you count your Shiv Nikiyim on the hormones, maybe if you're afraid of staining, if there's any kulisk that could be put into place, or perhaps he could remind you that if you're not counting your 7 kun days or it's a day that you're not doing bedikas, to be extra careful to avoid any shilas by not looking at toilet paper, etc. Like this, you could prevent some of the problems that can happen while your body gets used to hormones. Obviously, there's other side effects that women can experience, but this shear is limited. We're just limiting the shear to halachic side effects, not to other aches and pains or other side effects that women could use. So for the rest of this year, when we talk about side effects, we're talking about halachic side effects. So Rabbi Kasima, I just want to add, is there any other halachic issues that under the general umbrella of no matter what type of hormones you're using, you should ask a Rav? L'chatchil, it's always going to be a question.
So yes, there is one more thing. I'm sure there's a few more things, but of something very, very important that not many are aware of is when it comes to Vestas. As a general rule, that there are differences on how you keep the calendar when it comes to hormonal birth control. So exactly the details of how, where, what, and that, we're not going to get into the details because it really depends on quite a few factors. And every person may have a different case. So it's very important when you're discussing with the Rav and when you have made the decision that that's the type of birth control, that's the form, method of birth control that you want to use, it's also very important to touch base with the Rav about the calendar. Sometimes the Rav will mention it. And if the Rav does not mention it, or if it comes up in a later conversation, make sure, or it doesn't come up in a later conversation, make sure to bring it up with the Rav, because there is a different way to calculate the Vestas, the calendar, when it comes to hormonal birth control.
Okay, so now that we have the general idea of staining and calendar, we're going to just touch upon a few specific methods of hormonal birth control and what additional questions are come up commonly when it comes to halacha. One of the common uses of birth control is right after when a woman gives birth. Often they're prescribed the mini pill, a low-dose progesterone pill, and that works well with a breastfeeding woman, for example. It's common. We know that this mini pill, especially in the beginning, can cause staining. And often a woman is after birth and she has to count for 7 clean days. And she wants to make sure that the birth control already kicks in before she goes to the mikvah because she has no idea when she's ovulating. So what is a woman to do? How is a woman supposed to go about counting her 7 clean days at the same time that she's starting the pill?
So this is a very good question, and it's a very common scenario. There's a few ways about it. Some people, they don't want to take any risks. They don't want to take any chances. They want to count the Shiv Nakim and know with a clear mind not to expect any surprises. So that is one mahalach, so to speak. That is one method. There's one way to do it. So they count the Shiv Nakim before starting the pill. Now there's a catch with that. It's not so simple, because it doesn't just work. Okay, you finish the Shiv Nakim, you switch into colored garments. Oh, you started to take the pill, and you're good to go. It actually takes time for the pill to kick in, to be able to actually work and to be pill pulosid, to actually affect the body as a birth control. So the question arises, what do you do in the meantime? So for that, there are a few options. The best option is to discuss with your Rav an alternative form of birth control for these few days, or whatever the doctor tells you. Some doctors will even tell you a week. I'm not getting into that. Whatever the doctor tells you, the amount of time that it takes to be certain that the effects of the pill have kicked in and they are working, whatever the doctor says, for that time being, be in touch with your Rav if there is the possibility to use another form of contraceptive. Now, it's also important to bear in mind, not all forms of contraceptives are the same strength. They're not as all effective. So if somebody has a real medical condition, you also have to make sure that the Rav knows this in advance when you're discussing with him, because the percentage of effectiveness of some methods may not be what you need. So you have to be in touch with the Rav and the doctor on this very important detail. That is one approach. That is one way. Some people ask if it's okay to count the Shiv Nakim and to abstain. They'll abstain. They'll wait whatever it is, 3 days, a week, whatever the doctor tells them. This is highly not recommended for quite a few reasons.
You mean to count the Shiv Nakim and Toivel and abstain?
Correct. To count the Shiv Nakim, to Toivel, and to abstain. Yes, correct. So this is something which is highly not recommended, and for a few reasons. The first reason is, on a practical level, this could put a big stumbling block for the husband, for obvious reasons, which do not need to be elaborated upon. I think everyone can understand what effects it could have. But there's another reason as well, which is brought in the Sfarim. There's a Tzava of Rabbi Yudah Chassid, which I believe we're going to be discussing as well later on in this Shir, that on the night when the wife toivels, the husband should not leave her, so to speak. You should not be together. This is something which is very important, and it is brought in the Tzava of Rabbi Yudah Chassid, and we do take this seriously. Together with that, it's also brought down in the Tshuvas of the Shvus Yaakov, which is a very, very old Pesach, in the early Pesach, I should say, and it's actually quoted by the Alter Rebbe. His other Svarim are quoted by the Alter Rebbe many, numerous times in the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch, and he writes that if one tovels and the husband and wife are not together, this actually could create a sakana for the wife. Okay, there's etzes for that, whatever it is. I'm just bringing it to your attention that these are factors that one has to have in mind, and it's not something you want to play around with. But again, if you speak with your Rav and you find an etzah, there are etzahs, and you should speak with your Rav if this is your only option. There are etzahs of how to go around this, but these are the factors that everyone has to be aware of and to know before you do something, to go in with a full knowledge base of what you're getting yourself into, so to speak. So those are two potential options. And again, obviously the first method is preferred over the second method, or I should say the Mahalach. And there's another way also. Some people, they want to take the risk. They say, you know what, listen, it's already been 6 weeks, whatever it is. I'll take my chances and I'll begin counting the Shivnikim. And what's going to be is going to be. That is also another approach that some people take. And again, if one is having difficulties to be able to count the Shivnikim, there are possible things that could be done to make it easier. This is something that everyone has to consult with their Rav. So you're afraid, you don't want to push off the mikvah, you don't want to try other methods, and you just want to count and get to the mikvah. This is also obviously something which is accepted. Just be in touch with your Rav if you're having difficulties on potential leniencies that can be given for the Shivnikim.
Yeah, I just want to add that nowadays a lot of doctors allow you to start the mini pill way earlier, like even a few weeks after birth.
Right.
So you assume that the staining issues would be over by the time you want to do your actual Shivnikim. That could be an option. But I just want to mention, just like you ask a Rav, if somebody wants to just take a chance, right, and go to the mikveh with no contraception and then afterwards go on the mini pill, just make sure your doctor, besides the Rav, say it's okay, because there's a reason why you were given the heter to be on birth control. And on your own to decide to delay it, it might be a medical issue and a halachic issue. So perhaps the doctor should also be okay with it. You know, it's just something a woman should be aware of. So now, Rabbi Kasima, a common method of birth control is the combination pill. You know, you take every day, you take a pill, you know, for 3 weeks, and there's the placebo week. Now, sometimes women don't want to get their period every month. So they skip the placebo week and they go straight to the next pack, and sometimes straight to the next pack. It's called linking. So you end up getting your period maybe once in, you know, 10 weeks or 3 months, depending. Is that a problem, like in halacha, or just like not get your period except for, you know, a couple times a year? Do you even have to ask a shayla or something like that? Or is it or a mashpia, or just whatever you want to do? Just go ahead. If the doctor says it's okay, just do whatever is convenient for you.
So this is a very, very, all the questions are good questions because they're all practical and they come up all the time. It is a good question because this is something which, as I just mentioned, is a very, very common question, especially if somebody's going away. This is, they don't want to become a nida, they're going on a trip, on a vacation. This comes up all the time. So there is no inherent iser of combining the pill, linking the pill, skipping the placebo week. There is no inherent iser to extend the time of tahara. However, I do want to mention that this is something which is brought up by today's halachic authorities, today's paiskim, not to overdo it. I'm not talking now from a medical perspective. I'm talking now from a halachic perspective. What is the reason for that? It's very simple. The Torah gave us a system of, let's say, for in most cases, 12 days of Nida and whatever amount of days of Tahara. There's a certain Seder. The Eibusha created the world that should be running in a certain Seder. Playing around with the Seder could not actually have the best effect on you. It could affect Shalom Bayis. If there's no element of Prisha for a certain amount of time, it could have an effect. Again, I'm not saying that just because somebody's linking it, all of a sudden the Shalom Bayis is going to be bad. Actually, for some people, it could be much better, obviously. But as from a hashkafic perspective, they aren't halachic authorities that point this out today, not to overdo it. Is it also? You cannot say the words also, but you know, there's a framework that Eibusha created the world with, and obviously everything fits with the Torah. There is something called the Mesulekes Damim. There is place for it in Torah that the lady is not going to have a re'iyah for a very long time. There is room for it, of course. But in a time when somebody is supposed to be having the re'iyahs, the flows, we shouldn't play around too much or I don't want to use play around too much. And what I mean to say is that we shouldn't try to change the Seder that the Eibishter created. Is it
Okay.
us? It's not.
So basically, be on guard, see how it affects your marriage, reach out to Mashpi if needed. Just look out to see how it works for you. Don't just take the free ride. I just want to mention the word prisha means abstaining, and the word re'ia means seeing your period, getting your period. So perhaps we can understand the standard better. Okay, a very common method of hormones is the NuvaRing, where the woman inserts in her vagina this ring that stays there for a while, and it releases the hormones that way instead of taking them orally. Does a woman need to remove the NuvaRing for any bedikas or for tvila? Is it a chatzitza? And what if she forgot, she toiled with it? So we want to have that answered.
So just to point out, the NuvaRing is also, before we get to the Shivnikim and Tevila, the NuvaRing is also something that could affect the calendar. Just to have it. So as Mrs. Meraza mentioned, it is hormonal and it could have a bearing on the calendar, just to have that in mind. Now, when it comes to the Shivnikim or any other Vedikas, there is actually certain times where the NuvaRing should be removed in order to perform the Vedika. Those Vedikas are the Hafsik Tara. One Vedika of day one. The second bedikah does not have to be removed, and some say one bedikah of day seven. Depending, whatever whoever your Rav is, whatever his psak is, this is something to have in mind. Some Rabbanim will say only day one, some Rabbanim will say day one and day seven. Together with that, also for the Eina Beininus, it should also be removed, because there are certain bedikahs that if they're not done properly, they actually, it's ma'akiv, it actually holds back the process of whatever you're trying to accomplish. So it's very important, this is something to have in mind. L'chadchila, it should be removed. B'diavad, everyone should ask their own shayla, what happens if they forgot, or they made a bedika earlier, trying to think, maybe I'll get a clean one, and then they realize right after the shkia, I missed it. Can my original bedika count? I had my NuvaRing in it. Don't disqualify it automatically. Call your Rav to see if your Rav will be okay with a bedika performed in such a manner. Now, also, it is something to be removed for the tevilah, because according to some Paiskim, it's not deep enough to be considered not a chatzitza. According to some Paiskim, it will be a chatzitza if it's left in. So it should be removed. One can tevil and put it back in right after the tevilah. Bidiavid, there is a machlekes, there is a debate amongst the Paiskim whether or not it passes the tevilah bidiavid. Many are lenient on this. Some are machmer on this. But again, this is not a shir for halacha lemaisa. This is a shir to bring awareness of what the shailas are. And everyone should consult with their own halachic authority.
Now, sometimes when a woman will remove her NuvaRing, okay, by the way, ladies, if you have the NuvaRing and you remove it for tefila, please don't wrap it up in a tissue. It'll fall in the garbage can. People lose it. Just be cautious when you take it out where you leave it. But on the halachic level, sometimes a woman, let's say she finds blood on it.
Yeah, okay, so that could happen. There's a general cloud, there's a general rule. Anything which goes internally has the same halachic status as a bedikah. What the halacha by a bedikah is that any small, minute amount of blood which is found has the ability to be to render one nida. So this is something very important to take into consideration. If a person felt a scratch, whatever it is, there is a reason to suspect maybe they cut themselves or there is an existing makkah. This is something that should be discussed with the Rav to see Bedekis or whatever other alleyway, however the Rav is going to address the Shaila. But the Shaila is a Shaila. Many people think they're on a hormonal birth control. They shouldn't be getting their period. This blood must be external. That is not true. Anything which is found on a NuvaRing is like finding blood on a bedikah, and must be a Shaila must be asked.
Thank you. Now we move on to the patch. Some women have the patch that releases the hormones. Does that have to be removed for tevilah?
The answer is the patch does have to be removed for the tevilah. And if one is removing the patch, they have to make sure that any glue, which is left over, which is a very common thing, even if you leave a band-aid for too long or any other thing which is glued to the body, it will leave residue. L'chadchila, it is something to be removed.
Thank you. Now, I know it's not very common nowadays to do the hormonal implants or the shot because of all the staining that if some people stain, like there's no way out because it's in there, it's there for a while. But from the halachic perspective, what do you suggest? Do you see it's a bigger problem or?
So It's not a bigger problem. It's not any worse than the pills in a halachic perspective. It's just worse in it really causes problems for people, as was just mentioned by spotting. Many people don't use it. They stay far away from it. Either they have had past experiences or they've heard from other people. It's not a common method, and lav dafka isn't recommended either. If somebody needs it, that's a different story. But if you don't need to use it, it's not recommended for this aspect.
This is just another question that comes up. It's not for birth control per se. Sometimes people want to go on vacation, so they go on a hormone to delay their period. Just like, before the chasana, they use the Agestin to delay their periods. So before the vacation, they want to use a hormone to delay their period. Is that a shy at all? Like, you're not using it for birth control. You're just delaying your next period, and you're doing it for not to be needed for your vacation. Now, of course, if you're delaying your period, often there's oinus there anyways. You have to ask those shilas, because we said anytime you use hormones, you always have to ask how your calendar dates are affected. But this is a different question. Is even a shila, if I'm not using it for birth control, I'm just doing it for my vacation or whatever other convenience I want it for.
So this is a good question. It should be asked. It doesn't mean that the answer is going to be no. It doesn't mean at all. It should be something that you consult with your Rav about, because maybe there are situations where it could be recommended not to do it. Most of the times, lav dafka would it be an issue. But again, for those small cases where there is a shaila involved, a question should be asked. Now, I do want to point out that, as Mrs. Morozov just mentioned, the einas. Many people think, they're on the pill, they should be getting an extension on the cycle, and all of a sudden the einas come up. It's just important on a practical level to have in mind sometimes there may be slight spotting from the pills, and it actually could affect the einas. If somebody is told they have to make the bedikas for the einas by their rav, have that in mind. This has happened in the past where people were affected because they had to make a bedikah for the einah. Just have that in mind.
Thank you very much. There's another hormonal method, which is the hormonal IUD, the Mirena or other hormonal IUDs. So we already talked about the concept of how it affects the calendar, and you may deal with staining. Now, though, we're moving on to a different topic, which is the barrier methods. Okay, now among the barrier methods, there are different layers. So I want to first begin with the diaphragm. There is, I don't know if it's true or false, but there seems to be a statement that the Tzemach Tzedek said that for us, we could always use a diaphragm or the barrier method. It's never a problem. Can you elaborate? Is that true? Is it not? What's the context?
Yes, there is a tshuva from the Tzemach. Okay, let's start with before the Tzemach Tzedek. There is a Gemara that discusses that certain people are allowed to be meshamish b'meich. What that means is they're allowed to fill up the area with a meich, with a not necessarily cloth, a certain type of barrier which will prevent the zera of the husband to go inside. There's a whole discussion in the Gemara whether or not this is something which is permitted and it's not or not. There's a difference of opinion. There's the Shita of Rashi. There's the Shita of Tosfos. Okay, fine. Now, many Paiskim, including Rabbi Kiva Eiger and the Chasam Sefer, were very, very machmer that no barrier method is permitted at all. There is a Tshuva from the Tzemach Tzedek, which is very mufursim, and the Rebbe quotes it in quite a few letters. There's a letter which is written to Rabbi Hendel that I've seen the actual letter itself, as well to many other Paiskim that consulted with the Rebbe, when the Rebbe quoted the Tzemach Tzedek in a very strong manner, meaning you're afraid of other Paiskim, we have the Tzemach Tzedek. So now the question is, what does the Tzemach Tzedek mean? Does this mean it's a blanket heter that you can go and use a barrier method? Let's, for argument's sake, discuss now the diaphragm. Is it an open heter, a blanket heter, that you're always allowed to use it or not? So let's put things a little bit into perspective. The Tzemach Tzedek is discussing somebody who is, it's a sakana to become pregnant. And it is something which is a leniency. Many of today's Rabbanim argue that, one second, let's put things into perspective. In the times of the Tzemach Tzedek, there was only one method. There were others that were developed a little bit later, but there was only, so to speak, one type of method, which was something similar to a diaphragm. So in such a case, there was nothing else available, that Tzemach Tzedek was makel to use it. unlike other paiskim. Today, we have a way to avoid any shaila. And they would say that if the Tzemach Tzedek wrote his tshuva in the time when these other types, other methods of contraceptives are available, even the Tzemach Tzedek would tell you, obviously use the ones where it's glatt. There's no shaila involved at all. I don't want to say no shaila involved at all, but I mean to say it's less problematic than using the barrier method. So this is an argument that many Rabbani Anash make, and it is a very, very valid argument, because if you have a method which has no many less shaylas attached to it, of course, even the Tzemach Tzedek would tell you that is definitely preferred. There are other Rabbanu which feel very strongly that Tzemach Tzedek said this is okay, it means it's okay. So I'm not giving any hachra one way or the other. This is something that there is a debate amongst Rabbani Anash, and this is something that everyone should consult with their own pesuk, because there's a difference of opinion. So is it a blanket head from the Tzemach Tzedek? Depends which Rav you're going to be consulting with.
Well, thank you for that explanation, that clarification. Very important. Let's say somebody does have a heter to use the diaphragm or the cap, okay? What if when they take it out, they find blood in it? Or rather, maybe we should be informed that they should rinse it off without looking at it, because once you find blood on it, then what?
Yeah, so this is a very important point. This is actually something which is discussed in the tshuvas of today's Paiskim, so to speak, Rabbi Feinstein and others as well. What happens if somebody finds blood on the diaphragm? So as we just mentioned a few minutes ago, if somebody finds the blood on an Uber ring, it's like a bedikah. So the same principle really applies to a diaphragm as well. It goes internally. So obviously it's going to have the same halachic status as a bedikah. Now, we do have to bear something in mind, that the diaphragm is much more likely to cause a maka than an Uber ring, just because of the physical makeup of the diaphragm. So it's very important, if somebody has reason to suspect that it's coming from a maka, to actually see a bedekas. Of course, consult with your Rav first. That's no question about it. But it's important to see the bedekas, because if you're not expecting your period and you actually did feel pain and there is reason to suspect it's from a maka, it is more common that somebody may scratch themselves. It's something to have in mind. Again, it doesn't mean somebody can say it's okay without seeing a bedekas. It's just information for you to know that there is a resource that could help you if they find a maka from the diaphragm.
Wow, thank you. Now about the IUD. So there's a few parts to it, whether you're using the copper IUD or the hormonal IUD or IUB. Does insertion or removal of the IUD make a woman nida automatically or not? There's a lot of, you know, talk about that.
Yeah, so let's set the records straight once and for all. So we'll have it officially. Let's discuss the whole thing. What is the shaila? Why would inserting an IUD or removing an IUD render one nida, even if the doctor is screaming there was no blood? And when you call the Rav, he'll tell you this is something that does render one nida regardless of whether it was blood or not. So this is a large, I would say, gray area that many people are not familiar with. And the answer to that is, there's a halacha which has brought down the whole debate in the Gemara, but it's brought down the Shulchan Aruch, that ein psich sakever blei dam. What that means in English is, there's no such thing, the Torah is telling us, there's no such thing as opening the uterus without any blood. It's a form of a chazaka. If this action happens, then the Torah is assuming there is blood. Whether or not you saw it is irrelevant. Etzem opening of the uterus, or going through the cervix, I should say, into the uterus, this causes this chazaka to be in effect. Now, what does that chazaka mean? Does that mean that any small, minute, little thing which is entered, that goes into the cervix, into the uterus, automatically renders one nida? The answer is, it depends. There is a shear, there is an amount, which is brought by the Beis Yosef, which is dak shebedakin, which means literally something very, very small. And this is also another lashon of ein onabikin. We actually don't know, the Gemara does not tell us a specific measurement of what that is. The Gemara tells us a klal, a general rule, a general statement. The later Paiskim, if you look in the Darkei Tshuva and other Paiskim, they quote from many what that amount is. Again, there's a debate amongst the Paiskim, even in the Rabbani Anash, there could be difference of opinion. Some are hold even 2 millimeters is a problem. Some say 3 millimeters, 4, 5, it ranges. That is for an individual psak by your pesach, what that share is. I'm just letting you know what the psak may be. So usually, according to many Rabbani Anash, an IUD, inserting an IUD, will surpass that small amount of, let it be 2 millimeters, 3 millimeters, 4 millimeters, whatever it is, even though it's put in a tube, which the way they insert the IUD, they squish it together. So you don't, everyone thinks the IUD, the hands are open and it's a very large amount. It's actually not true. When they insert it, it's completely closed. It's put in a tube, inserted all the way past the cervix and released in the uterus. So many people are confused. What do you mean? It's so small. It's a very small amount. The answer is it's actually not like that, because the IUD itself does stick out a little bit from the top of where the tube ends. And maybe the tube on its own could be smaller, but the IUD actually itself does surpass most of the times that amount. Whatever that amount is, again, that's for every individual pesach to give the psak to whoever is asking them. Now, it's also well known that particularly by the Litvish Rabbanim, they are much more meikel, they're much more lenient on this halacha. And that's why if people have made Google searches or they've asked friends who are not amateurs, they've heard, what do you mean? An IUD is not a problem. The answer is because they're following a different shita, which we do not hold of. The Alter Rebbe paskins very clearly, like the shita of the Beis Yosef, it's dak shebedakin, which is a very small amount. By more Litvish paskin, they would follow the shita, they would follow the opinion of Ramesha Feinstein, which gives you a huge amount that if you'd ask any doctor, the doctor will tell you most likely that he doesn't even have a tool which can open up the cervix that much. But that's for a separate discussion. That's where the misconception comes from. That's where all the Google searches, where you might have found an IUD is okay, that is where it's coming from. This is not the shita of the Alter Rebbe and the Beis Yosef, the Mechaber, and the Shulchan Aruch. So just another very important factor, that what everything that we just mentioned includes both the insertion and the removal of the IUD. And just to point out, even those, some of the Litvish Rabbanim who are meikel on the insertion, when it comes to removal, they are more machmir because of the factor of the hands. Of the hands of the IUD, it's a T shape. When they're removing it, it's much longer. So maybe there could be meikel on the insertion, but many of those who are meikel on the insertion, again, not according to the Alter Rebbe and the Beis Yosef, but even those who are meikel, like the Shita of Ramesha Feinstein, are going to be machmir when removing it.
Wow. Okay. So once we have this IUD inserted and we're nida and there'll be some subsequent staining, how do we deal with getting to the mikveh? For some women, this staining could be ongoing for a few weeks even. Okay, of course, we encourage everybody to call Tahareinu. They have some, you know, herbs and some other methods to minimize the staining from the natural perspective, but from the halachic perspective.
So this is a very good question. There is a famous misconception that any blood which is coming from the IUD after it's inserted has a magical status of dam makor. And whatever blood is now coming from IUD is no longer considered dam nida, and it's automatically dam makor.
Makor meaning?
Makor meaning it's not period blood or uterine bleeding. It's actually from a cut. Just like somebody can have a cut on the finger, they can also have a cut in the uterus, which in halacha, this would not be considered a problem. So some people want to extend. The IUD is automatically considered this type of blood, which would be okay. So there is a famous rumor, and it's not just a rumor. There is a Das Yochid. There is one Rav who paskins like this. You know, we have to be open. It's true. There is one Rav who says like this. However, it is very, very crucial for everyone to know that this is not an accepted opinion by mainstream paskim. This is something which is rejected by Kemat all the paskim. All the paskim have spoken to doctors. They have researched properly how this works, and this has found to be not an accurate statement that any bleeding which comes after the IUD is already inserted is automatically considered dam makor. It's something which is very important. I know if you make a Google search, you'll see on the forums, on the blogs, it's quoted all over. It's dam makor. It's okay. I myself have spoken to this Rav, and many other people, Rabbonim, I should say, have spoken to this Rav trying to, you know, see that it explained to him how it's not true. Everyone has tried, but that's a parasha for itself. It is important for people to know this. Now that we have established that this is not considered dam makor, this is not the accepted psak, how can you help a person? How can a person, you know, once, let's say, they got to the mikveh, How can you stay Tahir? There's so many. We know that one of the side effects of the IUD is there could be lots of spotting by the copper IUD. It can be heavier periods. By the Mirena IUD, the hormonal IUD, it can just be regular bleeding or spotting. Some people, it can be nonstop, even for months at a time. So what is the Eitzah? What do you do? So as was mentioned, obviously you must be in touch with your doctor. You must be in touch with Tahirenu to push it, to find an Eitzah. Staying in Nida is not something which is encouraged. Do take action to try to help yourself. I've known many stories of people who went months and months and months because they didn't take any proper action, and it really affected their day-to-day life in a very serious way. The first thing is take medical action. Speak to your doctor and call Tareno or any other from Maesid that can help you. Now, what can be done on a from a halachic perspective? So obviously, rule number one is avoid looking at the tissues. After using a restroom, flush, do not look at the tissues. This is something which is repeated over and over again. If it happens, don't feel bad, but try to train yourself mentally not to do it. One should wear colored, but I should avoid using garments which may actually blind your ability to know whether or not a flow came. This is very important and it's a topic for itself. We're not going to get into it now, but it's important to wear colored. But also, you shouldn't, fool yourself, so to speak, that the period didn't come. You should be able to tell whether or not there is a flow. So colored, but not completely dark, which could blind the ability to be able to tell whether or not there's a flow. So those are potential aids that could help. Again, sometimes it's inevitable, it's seen on the body, or somebody did look at the tissue. Obviously, it's a shaila that you're going to speak with your rav about. But these are some simple, practical eitzes from a halachic perspective, together with being in touch with your doctor and Tareinu or any other frum medical organization that can help you. Now, obviously, if a person is going to be having difficulties in Yemei Tahara after the mikvah, certainly getting to the mikvah could also be a challenge. Without getting to any details, be in touch with your Rav. There are potential heterim that the Rav may give, depending on how long it's been, depending on the matziv, how the general, how things are going on, if there's problems with Shalom Bayis, whatever it is, make sure to be in touch with your Rav, whether it is to make less bedikas or possibly to wear other colored clothing during the Shiv Nakim. Whatever the Rav is going to tell you, be in touch with your Rav.
Wow, thank you very, very much on that one. And now we are moving on to if you want to discuss female condoms. I mean, we assume male condoms is bechala, very serious shy. That's not the scope of our discussion here. But what about female condoms? Are they okay or they're also a shyla?
For that.
Because earlier we talked about different barrier methods. Would this be a shyla as well?
So we spoke about, as was just mentioned, about a diaphragm or a cap, which is a barrier method. Then there is something which is far beyond that, which is a female condom. Lahalacha, without getting into too many details, it is viewed similarly to a condom, which is something which is not permitted. So a female condom, even though one may think, what's the difference? It's just like a diaphragm. It is not like a diaphragm. It is much more chomer. It's much more strict than a diaphragm, and it is actually close to a male condom as well. So this is something which cannot be used just like a condom, a male condom.
Okay, now going back to the IUD, often the doctors cut off the string to make it very short. Some doctors leave it a little longer. Sometimes the string can rub a little bit against the cervix, causing a little bleeding. So that's one thing. I don't know if you want to discuss that, or also during, if the string is longer, is a woman required to make sure there's no guck stuck on it for mikvah purposes?
So yes, this is something which is commonly seen. And actually on the Eid Bedikah, you can see it very clearly what's coming from the maka, which is caused by the string from the IUD. It has a very distinct shape and form. It is always recommended to ask the doctor, if possible, to cut it shorter. It has caused problems or issues or challenges for many. So this is something which is important to have in mind when you're going to the appointment. Ask the doctor if they can make it shorter for you. You don't want it too short because it's serving a purpose for when they remove it. It has to be long enough for them to be able to actually hold on to it to pull it out. So it should be short in a way that the doctor should feel that you shouldn't have any problems performing the bedikas. Again, not every doctor is going to be, it depends on the community where you live in, not every doctor may be familiar with what a bedikah is and how short it should be. But if you explain to the doctor what you're trying to do, if they can help you out, you know, just be open with the doctor. It's something that could help you going forward with bedikas. In regards to the strings being clean, we're not going to be cheshish that they are dirty. So al pi halacha, we're not cheshish for that. So you don't have to check by the doctor every month to make sure it's clean. That's not a concern that we have.
Good. Getting back to the string rubbing against the cervix. So let's say a woman does have a shaylan or shiva nikiyam. So the rav will tell her, based on what I see in the bedika, I think it's not uterine blood. I think it's the sensitive cervix. Go to a bedekas to check it out. Would that be the protocol?
Correct. It does, just because this is something that could happen, and just because the Rav may have the skills to be able to identify this, it does not mean that a Baduka is automatically okay. It is something, it's a tool that the Rav may have, but nowhere in Shulchan Aruch is it given over from Chazal. It is not a Heter which is given over to us, and we don't have the right to paskin on such things. It is something that the Rav can help you to give you a suggestion to see a Bedekas is to actually confirm for sure that that's what it is. Without that, it is absolutely not a heter on its own.
Wow, thank you for that clarification. Okay, I think we're ready to move on to spermicides. Are there any shyness when it comes to spermicides in general? You're killing sperm. And after that, we'll ask a few more specific shyness with different methods.
So when it comes to spermicide, if we were to rate the best, second best, third best, a spermicide, it is as better than a diaphragm. I'm not getting into the whole how far we apply the Tzemach Tzedek, and that's for a different discussion. It's not directly connected to this, but spermicide actually is considered a better method, and the reason which is brought in the Peskim is because the Zera still gets to the place where it's supposed to when it's alive. After the Zera has arrived, then something else happens and it blocks it, and it doesn't block it, it kills it. So there's a whole discussion, who is mitzvah, who has the mitzvah of holding back from Ashchas Zara, of destroying the Zara. It's a whole discussion in the Rishenim. Does it go on the husband? Does it go on the wife? Some Rishenim, some of the earlier halachic authorities hold that there is no prohibition on the wife. So therefore, if she puts it in and the Zara goes where it has to go, and only afterwards her action came into place to kill the Zara, it's much less of a problem than actually creating a physical barrier. Again, whatever I'm saying now has no bearing in halacha lemaisa. I'm just giving information. Everyone still must speak with their halachic authority.
And you're talking about killing zera. You know, now there's, the IUD has the capacity to disable zera from traveling where it needs to go. So too, on the FEXI type of treatment, where it's not spermicide, you're not killing the sperm, but this, whatever it is that's inserted, makes it difficult for this or impossible for sperm to travel. So you're not actually killing the sperm. So like the FEXI brand, is that better in halacha than a brand that actually kills the zera? Or just...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It is better.
Absolutely better, yes. Because it's a step much even better than that. It does not kill. The zera gets to wherever it would go naturally. And the its mobility is just—it's not going to go any further. So that is certainly better than actually destroying the Zara. Absolutely.
So Rabbanim mention it ever? Like, now, is it common nowadays for Rabbanim to mention if you're using sperm, if you only want to use spermicides because the doctor says it's okay, even though perhaps the risk of getting pregnant is, you know, higher than maybe using other methods. But if the doctor says it's okay, would the Rav say, if you're already using spermicide, if your doctor allows, I prefer you use FEXI? I mean, I don't think, you know, it maybe costs money or et cetera.
Exactly. So that's the catch. Many Rabbanim may actually be Miyayans. They may actually recommend to use it. But as you just mentioned, there is a financial factor involved. To the best of my knowledge, it is a method which is expensive and it is not covered by insurance. Again, this is to the best of my knowledge. It could be a week later after this year, it's going to change. I don't know, but for whatever reason, it's not covered by insurance, as far as I know, and that's why it is a struggle for many to be able to use this method, even though it's better halachically, for financial considerations.
Okay, so different methods of how spermicides are used and different shires that come along with it. So let's say, is there a in halacha, Okay. Is there an advantage or a disadvantage of the sperm, the sponge versus film versus the applicator or the gel? Like, there's different ways of using the spermicide. Is there any halachic preferences, or it's all the same from the halacha?
The sponge specifically, it's a machlekes in the Paiskim. So the sponge would be on the bottom of that list of less preferred. Gel, film with an applicator, that's all the same.
Or the suppository. Now, of course, I would assume with the applicator, you have to be careful not to look at it, because if you find blood on it, same idea of anything else that's inserted vaginally. So that we spoke about.
Right.
How about Shabbos? Are any of these, how do they, film, sponge, applicator, any shyness of Shabbos when it comes to this? Or Yom?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Especially with the applicator, with the gel as well. Any thick creams, these are all shilas and Shabbos. I'm not going to get into the specifics because there could be different situations and different abundant may pass can differently, but as was just mentioned, Shabbos is a big factor. And when using any one of these methods, there could be shilas with Shabbos. There could be a way that it could still be used if it's done a little bit differently. This is an important factor that when you're beginning to use it, to consult with your Rav of how to go about Shabbos. And of course, just to mention another very important part, beyond Hilchos Shabbos, going back to the actual application, even during the weekday, of the spermicide or any other gel which is being used, if one is using the finger to apply it internally, as we mentioned previously, it's no different. It would have the status of a bedikah, even though there's no cloth or any other external thing. It's still something goes internally. It's very important not to look. And if one sees, just like we mentioned previously, it is a big shaila. Same thing over here. You must consult with your Rav on how to proceed.
You're talking about finding blood on your finger. Or
correct.
Blood
finding blood on the finger. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Now we move on to another form of birth control. It's called FAM, FAM, the Fertility Awareness Method. And are there any shyness surrounding this method that actually became quite popular? Some women are using it nowadays. They find it, no hormones, no IUD. They find it more user-friendly for themselves. I also want to mention that some people use this method not for birth control. They use it to know when they ovulate. So perhaps they may not be asking a shayla about a birth control contraception shayla, but there's still other shaylas that come along with this method that they have to know because of Hilchos Nidah.
When approaching this method, certainly it sounds great. As we just mentioned, you don't need to use necessarily any foreign things. You don't need to put in IUD. There's no concern of hormones. So obviously it is something which is very appealing to many. It's something which is natural. You get to know your body and you work with that. So certainly, it's very appealing and many people would prefer such a method. So just a few pointers that we need to have in mind. Again, obviously, the first thing is it's a shayla. If you're doing any form of abstinence to avoid, to avoid ovulation, whatever it is, you're doing something with kavana to avoid getting pregnant, you should consult with your Rav. It is no different than any other birth control. Even though you may not be taking something, sometimes you may have to take something, but this is something that you firstly must be consulting with your halachic authority, whoever you consult with. That's rule number one. As was mentioned, some people use it for to know their ovulation. That's a different story. That's only a shayla of Hilchos Nidah. So this method, ultimately, as was mentioned, includes many, many steps, tracking your ovulation in a natural manner, which means one would check their natural discharge and based on how, whatever the guidelines are, would let them know whether or not they're ovulating. So rule number one is checking for these things could potentially pose a shayla for Hilchos Nidah. If somebody is checking using a tissue, this is just something to be aware of. If blood is seen, it is a shayla. So even though you may be ovulating, your period's coming in 14 days from now. It doesn't make a difference. If blood was seen right now in the tissue, this is something that you should consult with your Rav to find out whether or not it's an issue. It does not mean automatically it's an issue. It doesn't mean automatically that it's not an issue. It means it's a shayla that needs to be, a Rav needs to be consulted with if it happens. And there's also shaylas on Hilchos Shabbos. If one is using a thermometer to measure their temperature, this is also a shayla for Hilchos Shabbos, whether or not one is permitted to do so. I'm not going to get into the yes and no's and when, if there's a specific situation, if somebody's a chela, sheyesh besakana, ein besakana. That is for every individual case, but it is a shayla that must be brought up with the Rav. Now,
can I just ask you on the previous thing about checking the mucus? The woman is checking the consistency of their mucus, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So if they're not looking on toilet paper, let's say they're looking just on their fingers.
It's
blood in it.
It could be even worse sometimes. It could be even worse, or either equal or worse. It's definitely not an open header.
And what if they find, what if they're checking on their underwear? It's not toilet paper, it's not their fingers.
So if they did not wipe directly only from that area and they found it as a stain, it has any, like the halachic status is any other stain which is found on a colored garment. If they used the colored garment to wipe the kavana specifically on the area, this is a shiloh that a rav must be consulted with.
So you're
even
saying,
though colored.
So you're saying if you happen to see mucus on your underwear, it's not, it's like judged as a kesem, but if you wiped with the underwear in order to find the mucus on it, it will be a shiloh.
Correct, correct. Absolutely. If there's blood found, correct. This is a shayla. It would be similar to a kinuach, even though it's a garment and though even though that it is colored. So this is very important to have in mind. The next very common thing is, what happens if somebody's tracking their ovulations with this method and they realize that the ovulation is falling out, which is actually very common, by mikveh night? So if one is going to be using a diaphragm or spermicide or whatever other method that is included in the shayla, everything that we discussed previously, this was already touched upon, it is a shayla, a person has a heter to use this or not. What some people do, what something is recommended is, so they'll abstain. It's easier, right? There's no shayla that way. So the answer is actually there is a shayla. There are a few shaylas that actually we briefly touched upon them. As we mentioned earlier in the beginning, there's a tzava of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, that the night that a lady tivels, the husband should not abstain from her. It is very important. We take that Savas of Rabbi Chassid very seriously. That's number one. And number two, the consideration of the Shvas Yaakov, the famous tshuva of the Shvas Yaakov that we as well also quoted, that there is a ruchnistik sakana, a spiritual danger potentially, if there's no relations between husband and wife on the night of the mikvah. Again, if the Rav evaluates the situation and deems that there's a way around it, that's a different story. But the Shaila needs to be asked, and people need to be aware that this is something they should consult with the Rav about.
What and, about sometimes the days leading up to ovulation aren't during the Shiva Nikiyam, but they end up being past mikvah? If a person, a woman has a longer Shaila, so she ends up having to abstain, not mikvah night, but she ends up having to abstain, let's say 3, 4, 5 days, maybe the week after, like depending on her cycle. Is there anything we have to know about that?
Yes. So first of all the factors that we just mentioned, which is quoted in halachic sources. But on top of that, I actually forgot to mention one thing, which we mentioned earlier, also the potential michshol that it has on the husband, especially in today's day and age. This is something we have to be aware of and not take lightly. Even though the husband may be a tremendous Yerushalayim, b'chulu, that doesn't take away from the potential michshol that it could cause. And this is something that we must be aware of, something to be discussed with the Rav. Now, if one has to abstain for a few days, so first of all, we know there's a few letters from the Rebbe. It's known that the Rebbe was definitely not pro such an hagah, such a behavior. And again, for the above mentioned reasons, sai and halacha and sai, of what it could lead to. So this is something, you know, if it happens, you must consult with the Rav, because there are the concerns of a michshel, of a stumbling block for the husband, definitely grow much more, and the other factors as well.
Wow. Okay. So we discussed hormonal methods, barrier methods, spermicides, fertility awareness methods. Now, there are other methods of preventing pregnancies as well that we did not mention. Do you think we should go through them, or just blanket statement, all the other ones, just go to the Rav straight and discuss it with the Rav?
So tying the tubes, all these things, they are not just a shayla of regular birth control. There are also shaylas of sirus involved. Asiris means to make oneself infertile. So you're doing an action which is taking away the human ability, the bodily ability to be able to have children. So this is much more of a serious shaila than everything that we mentioned previously. Whether or not it's Mederaisa, Medrabanan, this is a machlekes in the Peskim, and this is far beyond a general discussion. This is really something which is case by case, because sometimes it's something which is medically required. It's mamish asakana to become pregnant, and that the Rav will obviously take into consideration, but this is obviously not something for a broader audience. If Chalila, somebody has such a medical case, definitely you must be in touch with your Rav to discuss it.
So there are a few more questions that came in on the Halacha Shir, Rabbi Kasimov. So we'll start with the first one, with the next set of questions. Can contraceptive pills be taken on a fast day? And what about a kala on the day of her wedding if she's fasting?
So this is a very, very, very common shaila. It comes up a few times a year. And the answer on one foot is that one could take, I'm not talking now Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. Let's speak about first the other fasts. One could take, if a person is able to take a pill without any water, again, you have to make sure it's safe, not Chas V'Shalom to choke, but if a person is able to do so, obviously without water is certainly the best. If one is not able to take it without any water, so the place can do right, that one is allowed to take a tablespoon of water, that is acceptable on a fast day. Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, there is a difference of opinion amongst the Peskim, so it's very important that everyone should address the Shaila with the Rav ahead of time. It's very important, just so everyone realizes that out of Yom Kippur and out of Tisha B'Av, the phone is off the hook. So by Rabbanim. So it's important that when asking the Shaila, it's important to, if you know in advance, to definitely check in with your Rav a few days in advance to see what your Rav's policy is on this specific shaila.
Now, sometimes if a woman even plans in advance, she could slowly change the time that she takes the pill.
Correct.
So she should even avoid the shaila in the first place.
Yes, absolutely.
Because most of the pills are once a day. So if you kind of, or let's say the same thing would apply if someone's traveling and they're going overseas and all of a sudden the time changes and you want to wake up in the middle of the night to take the pill, you know, there's ways around this. So be in touch with somebody who knows these things, because sometimes we can avoid the shaila in the first place. Another question came in. If I'm using the fertility awareness method, remember we talked about checking the mucus. So if the lights are off, I'm not even looking for a color. I'm just using my fingers and I'm just checking the consistency of the mucus, and I'm not looking at anything, that then would there be any shyness with that?
If one did not experience any hargasha, which I just want to be makdim that today this is something which is very, very uncommon, so people should not get nervous just because they're checking the mucus. They should not get nervous. Maybe they had a hargasha. If there was no hargasha felt and they're just feeling with the finger the consistency of the mucus, it is absolutely not a problem. It would not render one either.
Thank you. Now we're talking about birth control. Sometimes a kala, for example, there's a medicine called Accutane. So, you know, you can't get pregnant afterwards for a certain amount of time. Or sometimes it happens, let's see, a cow goes for a well visit and she has to have a MMR booster and you're not supposed to get pregnant right away for a certain amount of time after you take the German measles or the measles vaccine or something like that. So I just want to ask you, does it happen to you, Rabbi Kasimov, that sometimes a shayla even has to be asked before you even get married, because you have to plan it properly?
Correct. So there's two aspects to this question. There's the halachic aspect, and then there's the practical aspect. Mitzan halacha, if anybody is taking any of these medications before the chasana, there's no problem at all. I mean, one is not asek and pruravu. In the act of fulfilling the mitzvah pruravu, they're not yet married. So there is really no problem to take this medication. Now, if somebody knows that they need to take this medication and it could affect a little bit into the marriage itself, a month or two, for whatever it is, as was just the example was given by the MMR vaccine, you're not allowed to get pregnant within a certain amount of time. So be in touch with your Rav, because first of all, to get the green light, it's important. Number two, also on a very practical level, because the Rav maybe may give you an advice, or the Kala teacher, once the Rav gives the heter, to be in touch with your Kala teacher of which medication, which specific birth control to take and how to take it properly. in order to avoid all shilas. So before the chasana, just to summarize, it's not really an issue. If somebody's just doing it to time the chasana, it shouldn't be chuppas nida, something like that, it's not really a shaila. However, even in such a case, it is definitely the right thing to do, to be in touch with the Rav or the Kallel teacher in order to make sure to take to, that you're taking the right medication that should not cause any spotting. After the chasana, it's as well, like if it's for medical purposes, if it's dangerous to get pregnant, the Rav will most likely give the heter, so it is definitely important to ask, and as well, you do gain the benefit that the Rav could advise you, or at least pass you on to somebody, a Kallel teacher or whatever it is, that can advise you which proper medication to take.
Would the chasan have to know? I mean, if you're using birth control in the beginning of your marriage for a medical reason, let's say the MMR vaccine or forever, anything else.
After the chasna, one should mention it, yes. That he should be, of course, that, you know, it's a marriage. You should always be on the same page. There shouldn't be any secrets. And again, you know, to obviously disclose it, that the shaila was asked, you know, and it's something which is necessary, that that's the way to do it, yeah. So just to clarify, if one knows in advance that they will be taking birth control, so yes, they should let the chasna know. Generally, of course, we're dealing over here before the chasana, so it's probably not the most comfortable thing. The easiest etza is that the kallel teacher should call the chasan teacher, and information should be passed through this way. And again, depending on which purpose the birth control is being used for, if it's just a time for the chasana, that it shouldn't be a chuppas nida, you know, it's not such a surprise. Many people are doing it. And then for after the chasana, if it has to be a month or two, that's definitely something which is very important to let them know, but both cases, definitely this information should be shared before.
Okay, we have another thing here. Somebody asked to clarify more about a barrier method that you did mention in passing, some clarification. So one of the barrier methods is called a condom, where there's, let's say, a latex or something that is over the male aver, so the cells shouldn't be able to travel. You know, it stops the cells from going where they need to go. And sometimes now there's called a female condom, where the women also could insert such a plastic thing that would be a barrier that the male cells shouldn't travel further in. So could you just clarify, for the female, it's also a shaila?
In all practical purposes, the female condom is pretty much the same thing as a male condom, because they work, even though it's the female who is applying it to her body, but ultimately it's exactly the same thing, that the zeta is not able to enter the body, and it is just as serious as a male condom. Correct. Correct. It's just as serious, and this is a very, very serious thing. That, you know, it's not really something to be discussed in a public forum, but if somebody has any questions about it, they should definitely speak to a qualified pesach in halacha.
Good. One of the practical tips that definitely helps to avoid staining shilas is timing when we begin combination birth control pills, and the importance of taking them on time, any type of birth control pills, to take them on time. So why am I bringing this in? Because when it comes to the fast days, we have to, you know, don't just play around with it if you can't switch the time to avoid taking a pill on a fast day. Please ask a shaila. I didn't want people to think I'm taking it at a certain time. You know, ask a shaila what to do, you know, about that. Maybe I was being a little bit too flippant with that comment. Another thing is, you know, the doctor mentioned a method, you know, when people breastfeed, so they're less likely to get pregnant. I know women can ovulate and get pregnant even before they get their period. So I just want to mention, if a Rav gives a psak that you must be on birth control because it's a medical danger, you know, not, you know, it's something serious. If a woman is relying on breastfeeding, right, she could get pregnant even before her first period. So this has to be mentioned as part of the plan. Because some people think, oh, as long as I'm breastfeeding, I'm not getting pregnant anyways. You can't play around with it. If a Rav gives you a psak, you can't rely on chance. Maybe yes, maybe no. I would assume it's something that should be discussed with the Rav as well. Okay, again, I want to, so I think this is the end. I'd want to thank, besides Dr. Chudnov, of course, I want to thank Rabbi Kasimov for doing this very delicate, sensitive, and important shiur. I want to put again the disclaimer that we would have hoped that such a shiur would never had to have happened because people would go directly to the Rav, directly to the doctor. But because nowadays it happens to be the reality that there's a lot of information available in all different places. So with the Rav's advice, we made this shiur so that people could get the information. But remember, please take the information, go back to your doctor, go back to your Rav. This is not to take any personal conclusions. It's just for information purposes. Okay. Is there anything else you want to add, Rabbi Kasimov, before we say goodbye?
Mentioned it perfectly. That again, I just wanted to reiterate on my end that absolutely nothing that I said is a psak and not should not be taken into any practical form of application. This is only for learning purposes. And the truth is, you know, many it could be that a few years ago there would be no place to discuss such things in public. But the reality is, people are receiving their information from places that we may not be on our level or on our standards. So it's important. That's what we have come to, and it's important that information is coming from a proper source. And again, not lahalacha lemaisa at all.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi Kasimov.
We hope you enjoyed this series on building a family. Remember, to truly grasp the essence of this topic, we encourage you to listen to all of the episodes in the series.
We hope you enjoyed today's recording. Please take a moment to leave a rating or a review to help others find the podcast. We welcome you to support our vital work at mikvah.org/donate. For feedback, please email podcast@mikvah.org. Have a wonderful day.